This is 99% Invisible. I'm Roman Mars. The most popular sport in the world has been relatively slow to catch on here in the United States. There's this episode of The Simpsons that I think captures the disdain with which some Americans regard the rest of humanity's favorite game. It starts with the family watching TV.
Open wide for some soccer!
The Continental Soccer Association is coming to Springfield. It's all here. Fast kicking, low scoring, and ties. You bet.
Hey, Dad, how come you never taken us to see a soccer game?
I don't know.
So the Simpsons decide to go to the game, and the stands are packed. But the fans' enthusiasm quickly evaporates as the game gets going.
Halfback passes to the center. Back to the wing. Back to the center. Center holds it. Holds it. Holds it.
Boring!
Come on, you snorers! Do something!
I think it's fair to say that Homer and Krusty the Clown are echoing a common complaint about soccer that you hear in the United States a lot. That it's not exciting enough.
That's producer Emmett Fitzgerald.
They don't score enough points, lament these narrow-minded touchdown lovers. I completely disagree with this perspective, but even I have to admit that soccer can be a low-scoring affair. Professional teams routinely win games 1-0, or worse yet, battle for 90 minutes and settle for a 0-0 draw. But whatever your feelings about the relative excitement of the beautiful game, soccer was undoubtedly more boring 30 years ago.
The world was in general agreement that the game was too slow and it needed to be made more dynamic.
This is soccer writer, or football writer, Adam Hurry. And Adam says that the main culprit slowing the game down was the goalkeeper.
So the goalkeeper became very useful in controlling the pace of a game.
Basically, teams would score a goal or two, and then they would do anything they could just to kill time and protect the lead. And the easiest way to do that was just to pass the ball to the goalkeeper,
who, back then, could just pick the ball up and run a few seconds off the clock before throwing it back into play. And you could do this as many times as you wanted.
It kind of resulted in real sort of almost comical scenarios where they would kick the ball back to the goalkeeper from the halfway line, from free kicks that they had in the opposition half, just because they knew that that would waste precious seconds. The opposition team simply couldn't have the ball.
People finally got fed up with this uninspiring tactic during the 1990 World Cup in Italy.
Now, nostalgia kind of paints the World Cup of 1990 as a wonderful tournament, but at the time, it was regarded as kind of the paragon of cynical football.
Lots of low-scoring games, lots of passing the ball back to the keeper, lots of time-wasting.
There is one story about a game at Italia 90 between Egypt and Republic of Ireland, where someone totaled up the amount of time that Irish goalkeeper Pat Bonner had the ball in his hands, and it added up to 6 minutes.
In other words, fans spent about 7% of the game watching the goalkeeper just hold the ball.
Sepp Blatter, who was the general secretary of FIFA at the time, he said this is not why people go to watch football. It's one of the rare things he did get right in his time at FIFA. But he was spot on. He was absolutely right. This is not entertaining football. This does not inspire people. And there is no skill in simply standing there holding the ball in one's hand.
Something had to be done. And so in 1992, the International Football Association Board, the committee in charge of determining the rules of soccer, made a minor change to the laws of the game. From that season forward, in every league throughout the world, if a player intentionally kicked the ball back to the goalkeeper could no longer use their hands.
So any deliberate pass back to the goalkeeper from any place on the pitch could not be picked up.
FIFA put out a press release about the new rule, where they came down really hard on the goalkeepers.
It was entitled, "Goalkeepers Are Not Above the Law." And they were very strong about this. They said the goalkeeper has a very rare privilege in football, the use of his hands, but it is a privilege that should not be abused. Time-wasting is one of the worst forms of unsporting behaviour, because it attempts to deny opponents a fair chance of using the full allotted time to use their skills to win the game.
The backpass law might seem like a pretty subtle tweak to the rules of soccer, but over time, it would completely transform the game in ways that FIFA could never have envisioned. This little rule change would become one of the most consequential in the history of the sport and force nearly every player on the field to adapt. But in the short term, the rule change would cause an existential crisis for one player in particular, the goalkeeper.
The goalkeeper has always been a unique specialist position, like a field goal kicker in American football or a coxswain in rowing. They even wear a different colored shirt from their teammates, as if to signify, I am not like the rest of you.
The most obvious difference is that they're allowed to do something that no one else in the field can, touch the ball with their hands. Goalkeepers have this strange superpower, which they use to ruin everyone else's fun.
Soccer is the most popular sport in the world, and what most people love about it is the goals. And it's actually our ambition to prevent goals from happening, so we're sort of trying to disappoint the entire world.
This is Justin Bryant, a former professional fun ruiner who is currently the goalkeeping coach for the North Carolina State women's soccer team. Bryant is from the United States, but he played professionally in England in the 80s and 90s for a really small club called Boreham Wood FC.
They paid me, I think, £50 a week.
Plus room and board.
And so, by the slimmest of margins, I made a living, but I did.
Justin was this kid from Florida living out of a bed and breakfast trying to follow his dreams. But it wasn't always easy. The fields were in bad shape. The fans were sometimes hostile. And the style of play in England at the time wasn't very sophisticated. Teams would just kick these long balls forward and hope that their big bruising striker would make something happen.
You know, I had to very quickly get used to balls being played into the box and three or four great big bald-headed tattooed guys flying in trying to run me over, essentially.
But it's the goalkeeper's job to go grab that ball, no matter what.
Yeah, it's actually counter to several million years of human evolution, throwing ourselves, hurling ourselves in front of a ball that's moving at a high rate of speed.
Some people say you have to be crazy to be a goalkeeper. Justin doesn't love that word, but he says that goalkeepers are just wired a little bit differently than everybody else. If he spots a soccer team at the airport, for example, he can recognize the goalkeeper right away.
It's a different personality type. It's a different mindset, a different mentality. They carry themselves differently. They express themselves differently.
And what are the telltale signs of a goalkeeper?
I don't know. Goalkeepers tend to have kind of a knowing smirk. That's the best way I'd put it. And it's almost like they're saying, yeah, I know. I know what you think, but I still like to do this.
I grew up playing soccer, and I never wanted to be the goalkeeper, in part because it felt like such a thankless job. When goalies do everything right, they get taken for granted. But if they make one mistake, everyone notices.
We can make utter fools of ourselves. We can make just the most horrific mistakes that lose games. And it's very evident to everybody watching when that happens.
What a fatal error! What on earth is he doing?
But what happened to the goalkeeper?
I think that's every goalkeeper's nightmare, where you have nothing to do the whole game, and then the other team gets one chance, and it squirms right under your hands and into the goal, and you lose by that goal.
Whoops-a-daisy! Obama, what a mistake! How on earth did you do that? He completely misjudged it! That has to be the worst mistake that I have ever seen from an excellent goalkeeper.
That's a recipe for a sleepless night or two.
For that reason, the goalkeeper developed a reputation as kind of a lonely outsider. French existentialist philosopher Albert Camus was a goalkeeper, if that tells you anything.
You know, obviously I've been around goalkeepers now as my profession for a quarter century, and there are a lot of individualists, iconoclasts, loners, whatever you want to call them. We are kind of alone, tasked with keeping the ball out of the net with our hands.
For Justin Bryant's whole life, that had been his one job, to keep the ball out of the net with his hands. That is, until 1992.
I didn't hear about it until it actually did happen. I think anecdotally somebody mentioned, oh, starting next season, you can't pick up a back pass. And I couldn't believe it, because there were an awful lot of goalkeepers that weren't suited for it at all.
Goalkeepers in England were trained in how to block shots, catch crosses, and fight for loose balls. All things you mostly do with your hands.
A training session in the old days, a goalkeeper session in the 1980s, wouldn't involve playing the ball with your feet at all, at no point.
But now, if someone on their own team passed them the ball, the goalkeeper would be stripped of their superpowers. They would need to use their feet, just like everybody else.
And that turned out to be a bit of a problem, because a lot of them just didn't know how.
1992 was a big year for English soccer. It was the start of a brand new, highly commercialized league that would go on to become the most lucrative in the world, the English Premier League.
There were big money sponsorships and a new TV deal. The whole country was watching soccer. But that first weekend of games in this critical season were pretty sloppy.
We had a weekend full of goalkeepers making horrendous errors because they just didn't know what to do.
That's Adam Hurry again.
Goalkeepers were in a blind panic. The ball would be kicked back to them as it used to be, because that's defenders had a habit of doing that. But then once the ball was at their feet, they had sheer terror.
Over the first few months, it was as if all the goalkeepers in England were working together to collaboratively produce one long blooper reel. There were slips and falls and bizarre own goals. There was a particularly comical episode involving the goalkeeper for Sheffield United, a man named Simon Tracy.
Now, I'm going to take you through this kind of calamity point by point, because it really does sum up the immediate effects of the back pass law. He was passed the ball back, very simple pass. He could have dealt with it quite easily.
But now that the ball was at his feet, a striker from the other team started charging at Tracy fast, knowing full well that he probably didn't have great foot skills. And Tracy clearly panicked.
It's Tracy, and he's going to get caught here if he's not careful.
Then he tried to do a little bit of skill to get away from this attacker running straight at him, and ended up running sideways towards the side of the pitch.
Tracy ended up dribbling the ball straight out of bounds.
That's a typical example of just how the back pass
works. And then it went from comedy to farce, because the other team just needed to do a throw-in and they could shoot on an empty net since Tracy was so far out of position. And so Tracy tried to stop the ball boy from giving the ball to the other team.
He ended up kind of wrestling the ball from this small child.
Tracy then tackled the player on the other team to prevent him from throwing it in. He was given a red card and kicked out of the game.
And he has to go for his second bookable offence. Simon Tracy, the Sheffield United goalkeeper.
So within about maybe 15 seconds, the whole drastic effects of the back pass law had been summed up. Goalkeeper receiving a pass, not knowing what to do, trying to be clever, then ending up in this kind of calamity where he got sent off because he just didn't know what to do.
More often, though, when someone passed the ball back to the keeper would just kick it away as far as he could, sometimes straight up the field, but often the ball would end up out of bounds.
Sometimes 15 rows up in the stadium, sometimes completely out of the stadium. So it wasn't a very aesthetically pleasing development at first.
So the first reaction was how has this improved our game? If anything, it's less enjoyable to watch because now the ball's in the stand instead of in the goalkeeper's hands. World Soccer Magazine launched a Save Our Back Pass campaign.
I remember thinking that as a fan of the game, this is not, you know, the greatest thing to look at, and I think they're going to regret it. And I even wondered in the early days if they would change it back.
Another goalkeeper from that time, Craig Forrest, remembers the rule change causing friction between goalkeepers and defenders. Forrest played for a Premier League team called Ipswich Town, and he says that first season his defenders would forget about the rule change and pass him the ball in these really dangerous situations.
They would pass the ball back to you, forgetting when that rule came in that you couldn't pick it up. Sometimes it would slip their mind and they would lose focus and pass you one back and not realize that, oh, no, you can't pick it up and you're under too much pressure.
He remembers one moment in particular where a teammate whipped a hard pass right at his chest.
And he's yelling at me, why didn't I just pick it up?
The two goalkeepers that I spoke to for this story were the lucky ones. They had decent foot skills, and so over time, they were able to adjust to the rule change. But that wasn't the case for every goalkeeper.
And if anybody wasn't at all comfortable with playing with your feet, you got found out really quickly. And you could be good at everything else, but if you're not good at playing with your feet or striking a ball first time, and dealing with that, you'd be out of the game in a heartbeat. And a lot of guys, it did kill the game for them as well.
Over the course of the 90s, lots of goalkeepers were just weeded out because they couldn't adapt to this new reality.
So there's a tragic element to this because, you know, there are hundreds of footballers who simply were of no use almost straight away. Suddenly they were forced to do things that they simply weren't trained for. That a whole generation of goalkeepers who had been brought up to rely on their hands only, were suddenly rendered kind of redundant.
Right, it's almost like jobs lost to automation or something.
Yeah, exactly right. It's a little bit like that. But once this law came in and wreaked havoc with their entire existence, they looked even more lonely than before because they looked almost obsolete.
And you gotta feel for these guys. Like the goalkeeper, was already this isolated, lonely player, and then you just pull the rug out from under them with this rule change and tell them, well, now you need to have this whole new set of skills that you weren't trained for.
But you know, over time, the rule really became quite successful. I mean, for one, it completely did away with time wasting, which was its initial purpose. And then after a few rough years, goalkeepers really started developing the necessary foot skills.
Yeah, so then what happened is we changed the way we train goalkeepers. So, you know, it didn't take long for coaches to realize, gosh, we've got to prepare goalkeepers for this demand.
Justin Bryant says he had a goalkeeping coach at Boreham Wood who really made a point of this.
Once the new law came into play, he started adding an element of playing the ball with your feet to every session, almost every activity, every drill. So we just started adding this kind of thing to training. Everyone did it. It took a while, but everyone started incorporating it, and the goalkeepers got better.
Was it fun to suddenly have this new challenge?
It was. It was fun because, you know, I liked the feeling of being a more complete player. I think it made us feel better about being goalkeepers because now we weren't just these weirdos who stood back there and swatted at the ball with our hands. We were soccer players.
But the goalkeepers weren't the only ones who had to adjust to the rule. From the perspective of the defenders, the game changed a lot too. Before, when they got into a sticky situation, they could just pass the ball back to the goalkeeper who would pick it up.
And now they didn't have this escape route. They didn't have this kind of fail-safe. So they had to kind of evolve very quickly as well.
And as defenders and goalkeepers adjusted to this rule and got more skilled with their feet, it completely changed the way the game was played. Instead of just booting long balls forward, teams started focusing on keeping control of the ball with skillful passing.
Possession of the ball became imperative. If you had the ball, the other team couldn't score. That was pretty much the ethos here. And that starts from the back. If you can have a goalkeeper who's fully capable of joining in with the play, then he becomes an extra player than what you may have had 20 years previously. So it became an opportunity rather than a restriction.
Adam Hurry says that the rule change even made players more physically fit. Because before, whenever anyone passed it back to the goalkeeper, the outfield players had this moment to catch their breath. Now there's no let up. The action is nonstop. The average outfield player today runs about 7 miles in a single match.
Now they're all like Olympic decathletes. They're all built like middleweight boxers. I think what we have now is a completely different sport. It's quicker. It's more dynamic. Players have to be fitter. Football has become so quick and so spectacular, again, as a direct result of the backpass law. It is, to me, an underrated moment in football history.
Everyone that I talked to for this story brought up the same player. A goalkeeper who really represents just how far the game has come since this rule change back in 1992. His name is Ederson, and he's this incredibly athletic Brazilian. He's got a neck tattoo the size of his neck. And Ederson is a very good goalkeeper in the traditional sense. He's a big guy with really strong hands. He's very agile, good at blocking shots. But Ederson has spellbinding foot skills.
He's incredible with a ball at his feet.
Ederson plays for the English club Manchester City, who have one of the best coaches in the world, a man named Pep Guardiola. And Guardiola started using Ederson in a way that basically no goalkeeper had been used before.
Ederson is a playmaker. He starts attacks for Manchester City. He'll hit the ball 50 yards, he can hit the ball 5 yards, but everything he does with the ball is with a purpose. He's treated as part of the team because of that.
In many ways, Ederson feels like a unique talent. But at every level of soccer, coaches are treating goalkeepers more like full members of the team. Today, Justin Bryant is the goalkeeping coach for the North Carolina State women's team. And he says that when they're recruiting, they like to look for goalkeepers who can play the ball with their feet and possess the ball out of the back. Last year, NC State had a star goalkeeper named Sydney Wooten.
She took us to 2 Sweet 16s. She had shutouts against schools like North Carolina Chapel Hill, University of Virginia.
And Wooten was very short for a goalie, but she was an incredible athlete.
With great leaping ability and very fast feet, but mainly she was such a good striker of the ball, such a good passer.
And so the team developed a whole tactic of playing the ball out from the back based around Wooten's foot skills. Wooten wasn't just known for preventing the other team from scoring, although she did that too. She was a valuable part of the team's offensive strategy.
And so, in a way, this rule that initially seemed so unfair to goalkeepers has ultimately made them a bit more like everyone else.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the grand narrative of the back pass law is that it had disastrous early effects. It caused goalkeepers to question their very existence. And then over the course of the next 10 or 20 years, it brought them back into the family.
You still have individualistic, iconoclastic loner personalities, but, you know, we are, in a very real sense, more a part of the team now.
This year, the International Football Association Board made a few more tweaks to the rules. There's one change in particular that's causing a few little problems. From now on, goal kicks don't have to leave the penalty box. And teams are struggling to figure it out. Players are making mistakes, just like they did back in 1992.
It's hard to say right now if this will be an important rule change. We probably won't know for a couple decades. But if we've learned anything from the backpass law, it's that anytime you tinker with the rules of a sport, you never know what might happen. The backpass rule didn't just spring forth fully formed from the forehead of FIFA. One man claims that he was the one who invented it. And he has the facts to back him up. After this. So I'm back in the studio with Emmett, and he's got one more little detail to add to the story of the backpass law.
Yeah, so one thing that we didn't get into in the story proper was, like, who specifically came up with this idea for the backpass law?
Right. I guess I kind of assumed it was, like, this, the collective wisdom of FIFA came up with the law.
Right, yeah. Right. There's sort of, you know, that just sort of the wisdom of a bunch of guys in some boardroom somewhere collectively came up with this idea. But
exactly.
But that is also what I assumed. But as I was talking to Adam Hurry, who was the soccer journalist, he told me that he recently got a message from a journalist in Georgia who had some slightly more specific info.
And you mean Georgia the country?
Yeah, Georgia the country. That's okay, the one.
There was a game in Georgia this week, and a journalist out there sent me a DM on Twitter saying, "You're going to enjoy this. There's a guy here in the press room who claims to have invented the backpass law."
So, yeah, so this man's name was, and I'm probably going to butcher this, but Sulkan Yashvili.
Okay.
Yashvili.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Sounds good to me.
And apparently he's walking around the press room of this stadium telling, you know, anyone who would listen, all the foreign journalists who are there covering the game, that he invented the backpass law. And he is holding this fax as proof.
And what did the fax say?
Well, it was from FIFA, and it was written in 1994, you know, a couple of years after the law went into effect, and it was essentially a thank you fax.
"We're most grateful to Mr. Yashvili for contributing directly to the realization of this new rule, which has greatly contributed to the development of football worldwide. We appreciate the work of all pioneers whose ideas helped to improve our beloved sport."
And, you know, this was the first that I think basically anyone who's written about this has ever really heard of this guy.
His name has very rarely been mentioned, if ever, in the history of this backpass law, despite it being one of the most seismic events in football history, especially in modern football.
He's a real unsung hero.
Yeah, definitely. I sent him an email, this Georgian guy. I carefully translated it into Georgian and everything, which is a beautiful language, by the way. And he didn't get back to me, which I'm really sad about, because it would have been good to get his input in here.
Yeah, and sadly, we still have not heard back from Mr. Yashvili. And yeah, you know, like, there's really nothing that's really been written about this guy. And I don't, you know, I'm hoping that we're not spreading misinformation here.
Yeah.
But, you know, Adam sent me a copy of the facts, and, you know, it looks fairly legit to both of us.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that his story is watertight. I've got no reason to doubt him. The facts looks legit to me. And, you know, this idea has to come from somewhere, and no one else has ever been credited with it. So why not?
So, yeah, Roman, do you want to see the facts?
Oh,
I can show it.
Totally.
I can show it to you
totally
here.
Want to see the facts.
So this is, yeah, take a look at my laptop screen.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's a scan of a wrinkled fax.
Yeah. And I guess what I like about this is, like, when you think about the evolution of sports, or if you tell, like, the long story of the evolution of a game, the heroes are, you know, players and maybe coaches too, coaches who come up with cool ideas about mm-hmm. different ways to play mm-hmm. and adapt their tactics or their style of play.
Yeah.
But rules are important too. You know, the game is contained by a set of rules, and those rules need to change at times to adapt to the way that the game is being played. And maybe there's a heroic Georgian man who deserves more credit than he's gotten so far. So here's to you, Mr. Yashvili.
Yeah.
and your important contribution to the evolution of soccer.
Changed soccer forever. That's awesome. Cool. What a great detail. Thanks, Emmett.
Yeah. Thank you.
99% Invisible was produced this week by Emmett Fitzgerald. Mix and tech production by Sharif Youssef. Music by Sean Rial. Katie Mingle is the senior producer. Kurt Kohlstedt is the digital director. The rest of the team includes senior editor Delaney Hall, Chris Berube, Avery Truffleman, Vivian Lee, Sophia Klatsker, Joe Rosenberg, and me, Roman Mars. Special thanks this week to Michael Cox, who we also spoke with for this story. His new book, The Mixer, is a great look at the evolution of soccer tactics since the backpass rule. Adam Hurry also has a book called Football Clichés, all about the language we use to describe the beautiful game. And if you want to read more about Justin Bryant's professional career in England, he's got a memoir called Small Time. You can find links to all of them on our website. We are a project of 91.7 KALW in San Francisco and produced on Radio Row in beautiful downtown Oakland, California. 99% Invisible is a member of Radiotopia from PRX, a fiercely independent collective of the most innovative shows in all of podcasting. Find them all at radiotopia.fm. You can find the show and join discussions about the show on Facebook. You can tweet at me at Roman Mars and the show at 99pi.org. We're on Instagram and Reddit too. But you can kick the ball to us. We're open at 99pi.org.
Radiotopia.